Hello, everybody. It's the Vookcast. It's Australia's Nintendo podcast. This is episode number 173. I'm Stephen, your good friend, maybe. I'm a cool dude, I reckon. I've got my good friends with me. One of them is Chris. How are you?
Yeah, good. I like how you can't even remember your own name.
Yeah, it's been a stressful week at work. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, that's right. I've got a remedy for that. Have you played Yoku Island Express by any chance?
I've heard the good word of Yoku from a few places. I haven't played it, though. I really should get around to that.
A free demo is now out, so there's no excuse to go missing.
Huh. Well, I am literally writing that down on a piece of paper next to me, because I want to do
that. I read that literally 5 minutes before recording, so, you know, just wanting to spread the good word out there. I happen to review it for this little old site, Vooks.net, and it's pretty good.
Breaking news. Wow, well, didn't expect that on this episode. Along with our you know, late breaking news, we've also got Luke. He's here. What's up?
As little as I can get away with.
Fair enough. That sounds like a good philosophy on life.
I do just want to question why they feel the need to say free demo. Like, what? Who in their right mind would pay for a demo?
Maybe back in the day when you'd pay for one of those magazines to get a demo disc. Maybe that sort of thing, but that's pretty antiquated, I suppose.
True. I bought Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes for $49.95.
So, sick burn.
Yeah, sick self burn on myself. Whoops. but yeah, so those are the people on us. Those are the people on the podcast today. Where I figured I'd start the podcast off with wondering if any of you have heard the good word of Ys. Is anyone familiar with the good wholesome times of Ys?
From you, I have.
Yes. I also am up with the good word of Ys.
Well, I want to tell you all about what I found out about Ys. I played it a little while ago, quite a while back, but I haven't had a chance to really talk about it, and it's been overshadowed by Octopath Traveler because that's kind of the Square game. Everyone likes the Square game, and it's apparently very, very good. But man, Ys, I did not expect to love it as much as I did. So it's Ys 8, Lacrimosa of Dana. You don't need to have played any previous Ys games, or it didn't occur to me that you would need to at any point. I've never played them before, and everything made perfect sense. I think they might have made a few references to past games, but it's like, yeah, it's not really a big deal. But yeah, basically it's like a big, massive Japanese RPG. You are Adol Kristen, who is a adventurer by trade. I guess he just goes around doing cool things until he finishes them and goes to do another cool thing. He's on a boat. He's got some dudes on the boat with him, and the boat is going around this mysterious island called the Isle of Seiren, which has myths and legends around it that you shouldn't go too close, otherwise you will get marooned and never be seen again. They go a bit too close, get attacked by a sea monster, and get marooned on the island, stuck there with no way off. So, believe the myths and legends, I guess. But yeah, it really took me by surprise how much I enjoyed the game. It's sort of, you start off on this island, it's a little bit Survivor-ish, and you go around exploring, you find other people who have washed up on the island as well. Some of them end up being sort of party members, some of them are, you know, people that you just meet and they can form... Like, you build up a village, everyone sort of starts building some basic shelter and, you know, starts building some equipment creation places and stuff. And yeah, you just sort of basically go around, you explore an island, you fight the things on the island that want to kill you, you find more people, and they all have their own cool little stories. And yeah, eventually the story goes in some other places that I probably don't want to spoil too much. But yeah, I can't get over how much I enjoyed this game. Anyone got any questions, any thoughts that they wanted to quiz me on Ys? I don't just constantly
talk.
Yeah,
I recall that you were the one who reviewed Xenoblade Chronicles 2 for Vooks a little while ago, yeah?
I was, yes.
Yeah, so obviously that was a pretty big ticket JRPG exclusive to Nintendo and the Switch, and we've also had Octopath Traveler come out very recently. But obviously, having reviewed Xenoblade Chronicles 2, what's... in your mind, and this is just based on what you've written for the reviews, obviously speaking more favourably of Ys than you did of Xenoblade back when that was reviewed, what separates Ys from the Nintendo exclusive Xenoblade?
I think the biggest part for me was that the combat's just the general systems that the game used to go through and, you know, to progress through the story and gameplay, it all made sense pretty well immediately. None of it... The biggest roadblock I found on Xenoblade was, like, it'll explain something to you once, and if you don't really get it at that point, it doesn't give you much of an opportunity to test and actually confirm that you've understood how it all works. And I just found myself, I don't know, coming up against all these difficulty walls that are not difficulty, like, difficult in that the enemies were too hard or anything like that, although that did happen a little bit. But I think most of it was just that I didn't really get what was going on until like 10 or 20 hours in, when things started to kind of make sense a little bit combat wise. But yeah, that sort of that first 20 hours, I just felt like everything that I did was, I just sort of wandered into places and like stumbled into understanding how stuff worked, where this East is a lot less complex. It's a, you know, there's not as much to the combat. It's kind of fairly similar. I mean, fairly simple, but as a result, I never found it, you know, I never found myself getting confused. I just enjoyed the fairly simple combat for what it was. And I mean, simple's probably the wrong word. There's a bit going on with it. So well, I mentioned you get your characters in your party. And so there's three, there's I think six characters overall from memory that you can switch between. And each of them will have one of three different types of damage. So there's like a swordish sort of damage, a poking speary kind of damage, I guess, and then like a heavy attack that's more of like a hammer, or yeah, basically hammers really. And yeah, so you can switch between your party members at literally any point in time during combat. You can, you know, it's all pretty well instant, so there's no like swapping in and out. They're just basically your character model goes somewhere else and the character you're switching to replaces who you're controlling. And you can use that to attack enemies that are weak to specific types, break their armor and sort of stun them, or even just to access the character's different movesets if you think one will be more appropriate for the situation. And it just, yeah, the combat was always flowing. It never felt overcomplicated, but it was always engaging. It never felt like I was just sort of sitting back and mashing buttons until things went away. You were still always actively thinking about what you're trying to do in a combat situation. But yeah, never just bouncing off it and thinking, oh good, I won. I don't really know what I did, but I won, which happened a lot in Xenoblade for me.
I'm pretty much up there with you, Stephen. I went into it because I don't like JRPGs. I find them, a lot of them, to be super complicated. Like, you know, you've got to basically learn like another language to understand how the game's supposed to play. And then by the time you get through that, you haven't really done anything in the game. So I went into this one going, oh, you know, it's going to be another JRPG, but I think I didn't stop playing it for like 12 hours after the first time I booted it up. I just kept going because it was just so simple. It didn't throw a billion things at me. It just sort of said, you know, this is how you fight, and then you fought.
Yeah.
And then, you know, oh, we need you to go find people around the island. So you just went and investigated the island.
Yeah, and like that whole investigation part's pretty good as well. And it's very light Metroid-ish sort of elements in that there'll be places that you find that you have, like, you'll require a certain amount of villagers to be able to get past it. Say it's a mudslide and you need 14 people's worth of manpower to be able to clear that and get through to the next path. So if you have enough, cool, you've unlocked it, you go forward. If you don't, then it's marked on your map automatically. And sort of when you get to a resting point or a point where you just want to not pursue the story for a few moments, you can look at your map and go, okay, here's all the marks of things that I meant to go back to later on. I now have enough people to do it. Cool, I can now go to that new section, have a whole new area to explore and possibly find new people, which sort of feeds into that whole loop of now you can go to another place, now you have enough people to do it.
There was one thing I wasn't a fan of, and that was the raids.
Yeah.
You're running about and then all of a sudden little Paro pops up and goes, oh, danger, the village is in danger. And you're like, because it's always like you could ignore them. There was a few you had to do, but you could ignore them. And I'm like, I don't want to ignore them. I want to make sure my village is safe. You know, I'm spending all this time on it. I want to protect it. But then, you know, it was just survive against an onslaught of enemies.
Yeah, it's just like a horde wave sort of wave protection mode. Yeah.
That wasn't interesting when Gears of War did it. The horde thing ran out pretty quickly. So then putting it in as a sort of a main thing of the game was a bit... That's probably about the only real blemish I can point out.
Yeah, so. I kind of get what you mean. Like I did like that it never really interrupted what you were doing and that you would get the little alert saying the village is in danger, but, you know, no rush, don't have to come back immediately. And it was nice to be able to just, like, get to a point where, cool, I feel like I've finished this area, this dungeon, and you just feel like you can have a few moments to do all your sidey sort of stuff, and that's where you can go do the raid. You won't lose.
I did notice though, it always popped up just after you saved, after you hit one of the crystals that saved your progress.
Yeah,
that it would always pop up then. It's like that was a nice little touch.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of if you do go to it immediately, then you'll be able to immediately warp back to where you were. Which yeah, it definitely makes it nicer. You're never going to lose progress that way. I think with those raids, I don't know, because I did do them all. I know that you basically will have to do them all if you want the true ending. Basically, I don't know how far you've gotten into it, but
I finished
it. Oh, okay. For anyone who doesn't know, the true ending, I won't say what it is, but sort of the way that you get it is based on the villagers that you, or survivors in the village, you sort of build your relationship with them, build up a reputation with them, and there's sort of a score that's associated with that, and you need to go above a certain threshold, and if you are, then when you finish the game, you'll either just sort of finish, or you'll finish with like an extra sort of mini chapter that goes into a bit more story stuff. And I found that if I finished it the first time, it was real close to having enough over that threshold without really going to much effort, so it's not too difficult to do. And there's some quests that disappear if you don't do them quick enough. So maybe if I had have done more of those, I wouldn't need to do the raids. But yeah, to get the true ending, I basically had to go through and do all of the remaining raids. And that got me above that threshold to see all the cool, actually pretty worthwhile true ending stuff.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I jumped straight into, I finished it, the credits rolled and I was all happy. And then I jumped straight into New Game Plus.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I want to play more of this. And, I found, and I was talking to the guys at E3 about this because they were shocked that I'd found this, because that was before the game came out.
Ah, yes.
I found an awesome little bug. You know how you can hold down, like, I think it's the right bumper?
Yeah.
The right shoulder button, and it fast forwards through the cutscenes.
Yes.
I was doing that because I'm like, I know the story. I don't need to see it, get through. And I was fast forwarding through all of it. And when the cutscene ended, my player character of Adol was not present. Huh. He was still running around and attacking, but there was no actual character model.
Huh, okay.
So I was running around, and then he wouldn't appear in cutscenes or anything. It was hilarious, you know.
Oh, wow. So
everyone's
like
interacting with the invisible man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't encounter that, but that's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, give that a try if you're doing New Game Plus and you don't need the story. See if you can play the secret invisible Adol mode, I guess. But yeah, I think the only, you mentioned the raids as the only thing that really, you know, found as a negative. I think the one other thing I did find, it didn't bother me too much, but performance is kind of iffy in this version of the game. I've played sort of both handheld and on TV, but it seems to aim for 30 frames a second. It gets there some of the time, but there are some sections where it'll just slideshow basically, and it wasn't enough to make me say you shouldn't buy this game on Switch, because it's still perfectly playable. It didn't really impede how much I enjoyed the game. But then sort of when I went looking, it's like, wait, wasn't this on another platform or something? I went to look for Vita footage and it seemed performance-wise roughly the same. But then I was like, oh, I wonder what what it looks like on PS4. And it's like 4K, perfect 60 frames per second. It's like, ooh, that would be real nice if it could perform that well. And it's probably a symptom of it being developed for like a PS4 first and Switch second, with them being on a completely different like hardware architectures and stuff. It's probably just a symptom of the porting process, but that would be one thing that if they do focus on Switch as a like first tier platform for the next East game, hopefully they can go for some more consistent performance at least, because that's the only real negative I think I have of the game.
Well, that being said, there are a couple of times that have been round to my place in recent weeks, I do remember there was one constant you said that you would take the Switch version over the PS4 version for one reason only.
Yes. Well, yeah, you can play this version in bed, and I love playing RPGs in bed. It's kind of my favourite thing to do. So, yeah, I'd say if you're going to choose between them, you've got a cheap, well-performing version on PS4 because it's been out like a year, so you can find it for $20 if you don't have to look very hard. Or you can pay, I think it's like $70, $80 on Switch at the moment. But yeah, you can play it in bed. If you value that as much as me, the Switch version's perfectly fine.
Well, it just only occurred to me that the Switch should be the definitive JRPG experience for any sort of Wii, because you can take your waifus to bed.
Hell yeah, you can. I mean, that's exactly why why the Vita was successful with a niche audience, and now that niche can come join us in Nintendo Land in their beds, I guess.
And my girlfriend is shaking her head at me after saying taking waifus to bed. I'm not sure she's terribly impressed.
Gosh, but, I didn't know we had a live audience, but hello.
No, I'm wearing headphones. She can't hear a thing.
Oh, so it's,
she can't hear the other half of the conversation.
We're talking about you, not to you, Laura.
There's some context. Gosh.
Moving on.
I guess that's Ys. I think there's another game that it sounds like he didn't like as much as I enjoyed Ys, but you'll have to fill me in. Basically, I remember seeing this game or something that looked like this game back in the Wii generation and thinking it looked like just kind of a late generation shovelware minigame compilation. And now it's on Switch. What's Go Vacation and what's its deal, please tell me?
Go Vacation, I didn't play it on the Wii when it came out, and I think to call it shovelware would be a little bit harsh. I don't think it's a terrible game per se, and I think especially for the Wii, I think it would have been a perfectly capable family party game. However, there's not really any reason to come back to it on the Switch, I think, since the 9 years since it first came out or however long it's been or any of that jazz, because it does look a lot like a Wii game. It looks a bit rough, you know, cutesy enough and colourful enough, but essentially it's a little bit of a mini sandbox game sprinkled with various mini games of wildly varying degrees of quality. In terms of, you can play as a Mii, so one of your created Miis through the Switch or one that you've imported from another console, that sort of thing, or you can play as one of the sort of natives of the Kauai Island, which makes me cringe just saying it.
I read that in your review. Is it like, is this the Kauai, but Kauai Island? Like,
yeah, so I think it sort of continues on the weeaboo theme.
It seems like a pun that would have worked far better in its native language, and here it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. I don't really have anything to add to that other than... I don't know, maybe I could just make everyone as uncomfortable as possible by repeating Kauai as much as I can. But essentially, you can play as either Miis or the natives of this particular island, and they look pretty creepy, sort of uncanny valley-like, like they're going to devour your soul if you stare at them for too long. But... So you're able to have a fair bit of customization over the characters that you inhabit during the game, and you're in sort of a vacation resort setting. You start off on a beach resort, and you're able to roam around on foot or on various vehicles, whether it be jet skis or ATVs and that sort of thing, and wander around these little mini sandbox, I wouldn't go as far to say as open world, but you've got a little bit of room to play around with and muck around with up to four players locally. And that in itself isn't too bad, because mucking around with your mates and, you know, running over NPCs and your dirt bikes and that sort of stuff does elicit a bit of childish fun. But the mini games, sort of the actual structured content of the game is pretty lackluster. Like, there's lots of racing mini games, there's various themed games depending on the resort you're in, whether it's the beach or the city or the snow or the mountain ranges. So there's horse riding, snowboarding, snowmobile, dog sledding, and various skateboarding sort of things. But the thing is, none of these mini games are really all that engaging beyond an initial playthrough. And it is one of those games where your mileage will solely depend on the company that you're playing it with. Like, I'm not a drinking man, but I can imagine that, you know, getting a bunch of mates around and playing this while somewhat inebriated under the influence of alcoholic beverages, this might be a somewhat enjoyable evening, but... There's not a whole lot of staying power here, and for the $60 or $70 retail that they're asking for, that's Australian dollars, is pretty steep for something that I have played for long enough to file a review and may never revisit it.
Yeah, it does seem, and it looked like the kind of game that drinking party sort of example sounds good, but the one that I was thinking of was like, this would have been an awesome sleepover game when I was 12. Like,
yeah,
it looks like the kind of thing that you would just, I don't know, play for a night, you know, run around and run people over in cars and win races, and it'd be great fun for a night, and then you'd probably never touch it. You'd have like the nice, happy memories of that one night where everyone was playing in the glow of the CRT TV in someone's bedroom. But like, yeah, it just doesn't look very substantive. Like, there's not much to it based like on the review. And I've been looking around a couple of other reviews as well. It just looks a bit nothing, bare bones, I guess.
Yeah, a bit flat. And I think your sleepover analogy is a good one, because then, you know, afterwards you'll be trying to what's that phrase they use with addicts or whatever, you know, chasing the dragon or something like that. You know, you're trying to reclaim
the magic.
Yeah, trying to reclaim the magic of that, you know, late night up till 2 a.m. in the morning, you know, deliriously laughing at the stupid antics you're getting up to, and then the next time you go to play it, it just ruins the magic. You, like, you realize,
how did we have fun with this?
This is no good, mate. Why are we wasting our time with this? But anyways, one of the worst parts of the game, and like I said, it's not an inherently bad game. It's just a very sort of experience. But one of the worst parts of it is that, depending on how many controllers you have, so there's a number of different control options, which include you can use dual Joy-Cons or singular Joy-Con or pro controllers, mixture of the both, whatever. However, if you don't have enough pro controllers or dual Joy-Cons, then you are forced to use motion controls for most of the mini-games. That includes those where there may be a little bit of precision required, or in some of the racing games, or even just general navigation, which in the city resort where you're navigating solely on skateboards and rollerblades, trying to maneuver them using motion controls is pretty difficult. To bring up the person alongside me yet again, there were some notable quotes that I had noted down during the playing of Go Vacation based on the motion control experience. One was during a skydiving mini game where we had to sort of manipulate our Miis using motion controls to try and fit into particular formations and score points based on that. The person alongside of me, who I mentioned earlier, one quote is, "I hope the whiplash of the parachute snaps my Mii's neck." Another one was during a relatively uninspired game of volleyball. Was, "I want to hang myself with the volleyball net." So there were some pretty pleasant experiences with motion controls.
Yeah, sounds like a game that just brings out the best in everyone who plays it.
Yeah.
It honestly sounds like Go Vacation ended up being another one of those Me Too Wii games where, hey, somebody released a game that was popular, we can do our own version. And this one wasn't popular so much on the Wii, but they thought, hey, we'll just bring it across to the Switch because, you know,
because everyone's on the Switch, that's the next gold rush.
Yeah, and I think I noted that perhaps I agree that there is a market for this sort of game on the Switch, because the Mario Party game hasn't come out yet. Is that October that's meant to come out?
Yeah, October.
So we haven't got a Mario Party game for the Switch. The only sort of thing close to, you know, the phenomena of Wii Sports on the Wii, albeit a free pack-in title, was 1-2 Switch, and that was essentially a glorified paid tech demo, which, sort of going back to earlier when we were talking about, since when do people pay for demos? 1-2 Switch was a paid demo.
True.
That is true. I forgot about that.
So there is a gap for this game, probably until October, until Mario Party hits the Switch, and hopefully it's a good one. Go Vacation, I can't really recommend it, nah.
So instead of Go Vacation, you'd say Go Staycation.
Yeah, or just Nope Vacation.
Or Go Away and on a real vase. I don't know.
Or go and choose a different game-cation. Yes.
Or maybe it could be go and have a think about other Wii games that could come to Switch and would work really nicely, because that's a topic I thought might be fun to finish off this episode and get off the kind of negativity of Go Vacation. So yeah, we've each been having a bit of a think about this, not too hard, but like just having a think about what Wii games that we think would work well on the Switch that we'd like to play on Switch. Yeah, so let's go with Luke, because you haven't talked as much in the most recent few minutes. What do you think you would want to play on Switch that has been on, you know, left in the Wii generation, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, so for me, I mean, not counting Smash Brothers or Mario Galaxy, you know, the big popular Nintendo stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some of the more cultish sort of games make a return. And for me, that's Mad World, which is that black and white stylistic brawler from Platinum. Tatsunoko versus Capcom, which is another one of the Capcom versus fighting games. Mm. Zack and Wiki, if you don't know that one, that's a puzzle game. It's kind of a mix between sort of WarioWare minigame controls and Walking Dead style interactivity. Donkey Kong Country Returns. I know I said the Nintendo ones, but I think we've now got its sequel on the Switch. We need to get that one.
Yeah.
And Lost Winds 1 and 2.
I think
they're sort of my five.
Yeah, of those, I think I definitely agree with Tatsunoko versus Capcom. Like, that's a game that I played it when it came out because it was just as I was getting into fighting games, but I was kind of crappy at them, let's be honest. I still am. But, like, it was before Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out on the other platforms, but it was like a really interesting introduction to that sort of Capcom versus style fighting game. And I didn't really know who any of those Tatsunoko characters were, but it had Beautiful Joe and other cool dudes. So, yeah, that would be a cool game. I'd love to play that again on Switch or anything, really.
It's pretty much just the Jump Force, you know, that Bandai doing. It's that, but it's,
yeah,
you know, with Capcom characters. It's like, yeah, bring that on. So, obviously, licensing.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Mad World as well. That whole... The Wii was such an interesting platform because it was so comparatively cheap to develop for. So you had all these, you know, either experimental games that experimented with motion control like this, or games that experimented with sort of visual styles like this. It wouldn't be a game that I think would have been able to be made for any other platform at the time, just because it would be too risky to do something this weird on a 360 with the budgets at the time. So, yeah, I totally would like that to come back.
I want it purely because A, it was a great little brawler game, and B, it has John DiMaggio and Greg Proops as commentators.
Yeah, it was
throughout the whole game.
It was kind of hard not to imagine Bender was the commentator the whole time, honestly.
Yeah. But yeah, I just want to say Lost Winds 1 and 2. Lost Winds was one of those very first WiiWare smash hit games, if you remember that.
I think it was the first WiiWare game I ever bought, actually, the first one.
I think it was one of my first ones as well. I know Frontier, who do like Planet Coaster and I can't think of the other one, the space one that they're doing at the moment. You know, they've ported them to mobile phone, but it's just not the same. You know, it really worked with the Wii controller. So
yeah, it was kind of built around the whole pointer controlling the wind, but you also had like traditional button D-pad controls on the controller as well. So Yeah, you got a bit of both. You had like the touch-ish pointer as well as the buttons. Yeah, it was a nice thing that kind of the Switch does as well. Like you'd have that either touch-based input if you're playing it portably and you'd have the buttons for regular control, or if you're playing it on a TV, then I haven't played many games that do it, but it seems like the Joy-Cons can pretty well approximate a Wii remote as far as pointers are concerned. So yeah, it could totally work.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't want to dominate. What about you, Chris? What unusual Wii games do you wish you could play on the Switch?
Yeah, well, I've got to mention the little known games of Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2. I don't think many people played them, and we definitely need that on Switch.
I mean, we need those on everything. I only played Mario Galaxy 2 like last year, and yeah, it just right now I couldn't play it. I don't have a machine capable of playing Wii games, and I imagine a lot of people are like that, so I don't know, if you're going to remaster anything, Nintendo, make some Galaxy games. We'll be happy with it.
Yeah, I'd be pretty happy with that, especially if they did like a triple pack in with Super Mario Sunshine. I'd
go all into that. Can you imagine? Just like,
yeah, that's deviating. Sunshine's not Wii. I'm just spitballing now. One of the games I did mention from the Wii was the co-design by none other than film director Steven Spielberg, the Boom Blocks titles. Did you play those by any chance?
I did. Yeah, like not a whole lot, but one of my friends bought it at one point, and yeah, for about a month or so, it became kind of our weekend dumb party game of choice, I guess. Like, I think it seemed like it was around at a time before, like, quote unquote, casual gaming was dominated by phones, and so it kind of had that casual, anyone can jump in and play. It's you literally throwing a ball at a thing, and that's really all there is to it. But like, it let everyone jump in, and you could all have fun with it pretty instantly. It was, yeah, it was great fun.
Yeah, and there was a reasonable bit of depth to it as well, but yeah, what was it? It was sort of like a destructive Jenga sort of thing.
Yeah,
well, it was
that.
Like Jenga on steroids.
Yeah,
Jenga on
Super
steroids.
Jenga.
It's funny because Bloombox, like, that came out, and then I think it was a few months either side of it. I can't remember the order, but Boogie, that dancing game, came out.
Yeah,
and that was out before Just Dance. Like, EA were really creating great stuff on the Wii. And Boombox, you know, it spearheaded that charge. So if that comes back, yeah, I'm on board.
I think, yeah, sort of once again to that whole, you know, Wii was cheaper to develop for, so they could afford to be experimental. And I guess especially with Boogie, that kind of started a genre that, you know, continues to exist in Just Dance. But, I mean, obviously it was...
Which ironically is coming again to the Wii this year.
Really? Even this year? I mean...
Yeah.
Wow, I swear that game has to have like the most simultaneous platforms at launch of anything. Like, it probably would have been a FIFA game before, but I don't think even FIFA stays on the Wii at this point.
Well, I mean, gee, just think, if you're still one of those families who, you know, game on a Wii and that sort of stuff, gee, you've got some serious return on investment there.
Yeah, especially if you got it like when it was cheap, you could go get one of the cash converters for $40 at this point. So, yeah, you could buy all these great new games coming out, like Just Dance 2019.
Yeah, right through to probably Just Dance 2050.
Yeah, probably. I mean, honestly, I think the games, they're not as good on any other platform. Those Wii remotes seem to be, whenever you see Just Dance at a convention, it's always people with Wii remotes in their hand. No one's bothering with a Kinect or any other that garbage. It's like, just hold on to a Wii remote and goof around on a stage. Everyone's still using that technology.
I think it's now become as the Switch. They do that on the Switch. But
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Even prior to Switch, you know, all the PAXs, Ubisoft, Just Dance was always at the front of their booth, and it was always Just Dance on the Wii or Wii U.
Yeah, everyone had a Wii
remote. It was never the Xbox version or the PlayStation. It was just the Nintendo version of the game.
It was obviously the superior version.
Clearly.
Yes.
Any other ones that you thought of, Chris? I see some interesting ones on your list.
Oh, yeah, I'll quickly speed through these ones. These next few are mainly because they're ones that I got quite late in the Wii's life, and I never really got round to playing them. And because we mentioned Xenoblade Chronicles 2 earlier, I thought it would be remiss of me to not mention the original Xenoblade. The original Xenoblade Chronicles, which was on the Wii. And I think, you know, for that to come onto the Switch, that'd be fantastic. And, I mean, just to cheat a little bit, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X as well, just so I could play all three of them on the one console, that'd be handy.
I'm totally with you on Xenoblade Chronicles, because, like, as much as I was not huge on Chronicles 2, it still made me want to go back and play the original, but... I don't have a Wii to play it on with me right now, and I don't know if that's a game I want to play on 3DS. It kind of seems like not super suited to the platform. So, yeah, that would rule on Switch. I'd love
that.
Yeah,
I bought it on 3DS, you know, when it was one of those limited titles that can only be played on the new Nintendo 3DS, whatever it was. But it was one of those ones where I realized... I'm not going to play this on 3DS. I'm not going to play it on this console. You know, I'm sure it's great, but...
Yeah,
no,
I know people that had a great... You know, they played it the whole way through, thought it was a blast, but, you know, good for them. It's not... It's just... It just doesn't work for me on such a tiny little screen. It's such a long... It's like, I guess RPGs work pretty well on handhelds generally, but that just seems like it's got the scope of a console game and it doesn't really work on a postage stamp screen.
Yeah. And I think another interesting thing was that although all of the Xenoblade Chronicles games have been pretty reasonably well critically received, I think it's regarded that the first Xenoblade Chronicles is still the best, because I think they may have, just from what I've read and heard, the Xenoblade Chronicles X and Chronicles 2, I think, are slightly more linear, which I don't think is a bad thing, but I do remember hearing the best things about Xenoblade Chronicles, although that could be that maybe the series just hasn't progressed a lot in the years that it's been developed.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, Xenoblade would be cool. Any others, or shall I jump into mine? I have a couple that you guys haven't taken.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just finish off by saying The Last Story, that was an RPG that I missed that apparently was quite good, and Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn, because both the Fire Emblem games, the one for GameCube, Path of Radiance or whatever it was, and the Wii one, Radiant Dawn, I think they both had a pretty limited print run, so yeah, I wouldn't mind having another go on Switch.
Those games are so expensive if you want to find a legit copy. It's like over $100 per game, and that's... I enjoy Fire Emblem, but I'm not going to go and do that. So, yeah, give you know a Fire Emblem Classic Collection on Switch. Solve everyone's problems. That'd be delightful.
Yeah, including the handheld ones and the ones that you know haven't been localized for the West.
But yeah.
Anyways, what have you got for us, Stephen?
Yeah, the few that I have left, one of them kind of... The Last Story is in the same kind of boat. It was one of those Project Rainfall games. Like, it didn't come out in the US for a while, and they had a big campaign to get it over. But yeah, Pandora's Tower is one that I bought. I bought that game like after like my first or second time when I was a guest on this podcast like years and years ago. And like, because I remember James made it sound super interesting just the way it was structured and the characters and stuff. But knowing me, I bought it and it's still sitting in its case, literally never booted now. And it's like, what? 8 years? It's many, many years later, let's say. So yeah, I can't play it now. I still kind of want to, and if I'm going to, it will be on the Switch. That'll give me some time, and apparently it's really good, so please. Other ones, I don't know if any of you have played the Klonoa games or even like the Wii specific Klonoa remake, but that game is, I think, needs a bigger audience. It didn't get a massive audience on its original PS1 release, and I don't think it really did super successful numbers on the Wii, but it's a cool little platformer that's like, I guess, a good alternative if you're looking at Mario and you want something, you know, a bit different. Obviously, you want a 2D platformer, but this one's got a little bit more complexity in the way it controls, in more sort of interesting characters and environments and stuff. I love Klonoa, and I want more people to play it, and it should happen on Switch. And yeah, the last one that y'all didn't take was Muramasa. Have any of you played that on any of its platforms?
See, I was thinking of Muramasa, it's the Demon Blade.
Yeah, the Demon Blade.
Right? Yeah. I was thinking of putting that on my list, and I was like, yeah, but you know, it came out on PS4 recently.
Did it?
And was remastered again for PS4, and it looks incredible.
I didn't realize that, because I was thinking you could only get it on Wii and Vita, as far as I remembered. So I was like, how is this game not playable on a current platform? Switch would be perfect, but I didn't know it was on PS4. Maybe I should investigate that and probably play it again.
But yeah, because I was going to put it on my list, and I was honestly tossing up between that and Donkey Kong.
Ah, yes.
And I thought Donkey Kong, because it would complete the, you know, you'd have both of them on the one platform.
And because Donkey Kong is the greatest series of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
I've heard people go ape over it.
Nice one.
Well, there go the win from my sales, but Muramasa's awesome. Play it on whatever platform you can. Bring it to Switch, please. Gosh, it's VanillaWare. Do it, please. Because they've been remastering Dragon's Crown, that game, the one with controversial character designs. Yeah, that's been sort of like super remastered, I think like 4K PS4 Pro version now. So once they're finished with that, Muramasa, please. On Switch, apparently they're already doing it on PS4. But yeah, those are some good-ass Wii games that I think would be great, or that we think would be great on the Switch. Yeah, any other
Wii games indeed.
Yeah. Did we have any final closing thoughts before we wrap this whole thing up?
I think just for the sake of our old mate Josh, good old Mario Bones, I did see that he mentioned in the Slack that, what was it, the The Last King's Story? Or
Little King's Story.
Little King's Story, that's the one. Yeah, that'd be a cool one to see.
Well, it was another one too. My Life as a King.
Is that...
That's Square Enix.
Yeah, what was My Life as a King? Was that like a Final Fantasy spin-off or something? Or
You're basically the ruler of a town in a Final Fantasy world, and you got to build it up by sending people out on quests and everything, and then there was a sequel that, for some reason, people didn't play at all, and it was like My Life as a Demon King.
Yes.
You're the bad guy.
Yeah, I think, actually, Little King's Story, I didn't play it, but my understanding was that it kind of was a little bit Pikmin-esque, and there is a giant Pikmin-sized hole on the Switch, so go for it. That'd fill that hole quite nicely.
It
would indeed.
Yeah, I think it was Pikmin and Kingdom Management sort of hybrid thing. So, yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, well, with that, I guess we'll bring this episode of the Vookcast to a close. Thank you very, very much for listening. Hope you had as wonderful a time listening as we did making this whole messy thing. It's good fun. If you want to be super cool and like rule, you could leave a review for us in Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast platform that you choose to listen to podcasts on. It'll help people find us if you think we're good, and share the word, I guess. I'd really appreciate it. Aside from that, jump onto in your podcast client. All of our social bits and pieces will be in the show notes, or it'll be on vooks.net with the full show notes on there. Jump on the site. It's vooks.net. I've got reviews. Everything we've talked about has reviews. We've got some, all the good bargains, all the good news, lots of good stuff on there. Until next time, I want to say see you later. Say goodbye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye, all.